Hey, what's up? This is Sully from Godsmack. Strap on those boots, baby, because you are now in the trenches of the war room with the one and only Mistress Carrie right here on the Mistress Carrie podcast.
What's up? This is Joe Rogan, and you're listening to Mistress Carrie.
Her hair is so lovely. Pretty eyes.
Hey, this is Brent from Shinedown, and you're listening to Mistress Carrie. Hey, Carrie, go put your bra on, girl.
Hey, this is Steven Tyler, and you'll be listening to the baddest bitch in Boston, Mistress Carrie.
What's up? This is Aaron from Stain, and you're listening to Mistress Carrie.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters, and you're listening to the one, the only, Mistress Carrie.
Hey, this is David from the band Disturbed, and you're listening to the baddest bitch in Boston, Mistress Carrie.
Hi, Bruce Dickinson here from Iron Maiden. Yes, indeed, Miss Whiplash herself, Mrs. Carrie, is here to unchain your brain.
Hi, this is Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. You're listening to Mistress Carrie.
This is Dennis Leary. You are listening to my favorite, Mistress Carrie.
Hey, this is Corey from Stone Sour, and you're listening to, you have the privilege of listening to Mistress Carrie.
It's Mistress Carrie reporting for duty from MCHQ for a bonus episode of the Mistress Carrie podcast. Earlier today, we released episode 200 of the Mistress Carrie podcast featuring Hardy. But with a milestone like 200 episodes, a bonus episode was definitely needed. If you go to mistresscarrie.com, you can check out all the episodes of the podcast and every sit rep. The situation report gets released every weekday, running down all of your headlines in rock, entertainment, and music in around 5 minutes. On the website, you'll also find every episode of my weekly video show, Cocktails in the War Room, my blog, the extensive concert calendar for every rock show coming through New England, and you can even do a little shopping in the online Mistress Carrie store. Find all that and more at mistresscarrie.com. And speaking of concerts, Joe Satriani and Steve Vai are headed to the Orpheum Theater in Boston this Friday, April 5th. I thought the duo that have been friends for decades would be the perfect addition to the celebration of my 200th episode. Joe Satriani and Steve Vai just released their first ever collaborative song. It's called The Sea of Emotion, Part 1. And you have got to check out the video. The fashion? Hilarious. I actually talked to Joe Satriani and Steve Vai about their wardrobe choices and some of their fashion regrets from their long careers. We also talked about their longstanding friendship, their first guitars, inspirational guitarists like Eddie Van Halen and Brian May, Joe Satriani's brief appearance in the film Moneyball, performing the national anthem, and so much more. Joe first appeared on the Mistress Carrie podcast on episode 93, but this is Steve Vai's first appearance on the show. And he didn't disappoint, technical difficulties and all. Thank you so much to everybody that has made the Mistress Carrie podcast a success. And to continue on with the celebration of its 200 episodes, allow me to reintroduce you to Joe Satriani and to welcome Steve Vai. Mr. Satriani, Mr. Vai, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You guys are on tour together, but you're not together now. Are you in the same hotel? Are you in different buses? What are you doing?
Yeah, where are we, Steve?
You're right on the other side of that wall.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, we're in the same hotel.
I think I've got the same painting on my wall as you got behind you.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I'm looking at the crystal mirrors that you've got there. I'm looking at them right now.
That's right. Yeah. I couldn't pass that up. When you do these things, you're looking around the hotel room like, what could be a cool background? So,
yeah, they usually buy that hotel art in bulk.
Yes.
Well, Joe, you've been on the show before. But Mr. Vai, it's nice to have you on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time. It's nice to meet you.
Thank you for the invite.
Nice. Congratulations. About 30 minutes ago, you guys released your video, and I just finished watching the video and admiring your stellar fashion sense.
Yeah.
Oh, the 70s. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, let's go way deep into the closet and see what's in there. It was a great opportunity to kind of relive the glory days.
Yeah. The 70s were known for some interesting fashions and some fashions that should probably never, ever come back.
Are you making fun of my bottoms?
No. Look, bell bottoms, all of that stuff at one point or another has come back in fashion, gone out of fashion, come back in fashion. It's just a matter of time before it always comes back around.
Yeah. I tell you, the funny thing about that is, and it's one thing to look at the old photographs, but when you put them on, you move differently. You know, when you put on those, the jackets, the shirts, you get the whole thing going. Suddenly you realize, no wonder we acted like that, because the kind of the clothes, they inform your movements to a certain degree.
Yeah. I was only hoping for a hula hoop.
And as a woman, those big platform shoes that even the men wore back then, they make you move differently as well.
Oh, yeah. It's really funny. The other side of that is when you do something like this, you know, you're dealing with costumes. So these clothes are old, and they come with this. In this case, they came with the smell of the 70s, which also helped us.
Certainly did. Yeah. It's a smell-o-rama video, too.
Smell-o-rama.
I bet, like mothballs, it just smells great.
Well, it was great also because of the location. You know, Joe's son, ZZ, pulled this whole thing together. And, you know, he had a vision, and he convinced us of it. And the location was this period place with all these vintage rooms. And it was such a hoot. You know, it felt like the period you were stepping into.
Yeah. It's called the Honeymoon Hotel, I think.
Was that it? Yeah.
Is it in the Poconos?
In LA. No, just in LA. You know, it's a great place to shoot period videos. The funny thing was, the whole thing about the wigs, we hadn't really made a decision one way or the other until maybe a second before we started filming. And we said, oh, is that a wig? Let me try that on. And before you know it, it became the wig video.
Well, you guys have been friends for so long that you have seen each other go through different phases of your own fashion. And Joe, I know you've been.
I remember him when he had hair.
I wasn't going to say it, but I'll let you say it. But Joe, you've been sharing some interesting photos recently on your social media and stuff. Is there an outfit or a look in your own individual careers that you wish you could erase from the ether, especially now that social media has a way of bringing this stuff back?
You know, I'm embracing the whole thing. It's that, you know, being embarrassed by your own fashion sense, I think is a good thing, because it gets you to relax and accept something new a lot easier, rather than, you know, fretting over the past, you know. Although that's not a viable excuse. I am sorry, so let me apologize right now. But let me just say that there are going to be some missteps in the future, so I just want to prepare everybody.
Nobody gets it right every time. Exactly.
Yeah, it was funny because I remember when I had joined Dave Roth's band, one of the first things they did, because we were shooting a video, he hired a wardrobe woman, and she went to Melrose Boulevard, which is this shopping area in downtown Hollywood where all the really funky stuff is. And she came back with racks and racks of the craziest, wildest clothes. And our goal was, in every shot, we have to be wearing something different. And there's some pretty excruciating moments there. But it was fun. You know, you can only move in the genre, you know, the time that you're in. So
are you guys sentimental when it comes to that stuff? With like stuff you wear in videos, do you try to save that, or are you just collecting guitars?
Collecting guitars is always a good idea.
I knew you guys would have guitars in your hands when we talked. Both of you do. I love it.
Yeah,
I mean, he's making me learn music.
I do save a bunch of things. some of them are irreplaceable. Like I had a leather jacket for the Summer Song video, and it's got these chrome rings everywhere. The most uncomfortable thing you'd ever want to wear. But it's so unusual that I decided to keep that one. So yeah, there are some that I think are worth keeping. And then other things you're like, whew, throw that thing away, like right away, you know?
Yeah, I kind of like to keep a lot of the old stuff. A lot of the old clothes that I wore, my wife made for me, you know, because she went through this period of making clothes. And every now and then, it's funny, the other day I went through a whole bunch of stuff. I do keep everything, you know, and I wanted to get rid of them. I'm all about getting rid of stuff now. And I had to put a whole bunch of clothes in an auction, but I found all my wife's clothes. And I tried to put a pair of pants on. I can't even get my leg in the waist. I was like that. So.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
I ask guitarists every time they come on the show, what was the first guitar you ever got? Who gave it to you? Where did it come from? And do you still have it?
Oh, well, my first electric guitar was a Hagstrom 3. Got it at Roosevelt Field on Long Island, not too far from where Steve and I grew up. It was, I think, $120. My sister Carol bought it for me with her first paycheck from being an art teacher at Westbury High School. And I sold it to Steve's friend, Frank Strassel, like, I don't know, 72 maybe, something like that, when I moved on to playing a Telecaster. So yeah, I haven't seen it since then, unfortunately.
That was a great guitar. It was the white one, right? The white Hagstrom?
Yeah.
Yeah, my first guitar was a little red Tesco Del Rey that I bought from a friend of mine, Richard Jankowski, and he had it in his room on the wall, and I would go over and look at it, and I asked him, why don't you play it? And he goes, I'm not going to play that. I'll sell it to you. And that was like a moment of truth, you know, and $5, and I got that guitar, and boy, that was like heaven in a cup.
I want to talk to you guys about guitar tone. During the pandemic, I had a really long conversation with Nuno Bettencourt, and it was shortly after Eddie Van Halen passed. And he told me about the day that he got to meet Eddie, and he lived his lifelong dream, which was to meet him at a Van Halen rehearsal, and he was invited to play Eddie's guitar through all his gear. And he was like, I'm finally going to live my dream, and I'm going to sound like Eddie Van Halen when I play. And he grabbed Eddie's guitar with Eddie there, and he started playing, and he said, and I sounded like myself, and I was heartbroken. And so we started talking about the concept of guitar tone. So for each one of you, where do you think guitar tone comes from? If it, obviously it doesn't just come from the gear itself.
Oh, these. It's the fingertips. Steve and I have a similar story. Back in 91, we were playing, we were in London rehearsing for the Guitar Legends concert that was being held in Sevilla, Spain. And so we're in a small rehearsal room with Brian May, and Nuno was there, and Steve and myself. And of course, we all huddle around Brian and like, Brian, can we play your guitar? You know, this legendary guitar. And he's got, you know, the number one guitar and his number one Vox amp. And we're dying to sound just like, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody, you know. Of course, yeah. I pick it up, I start playing. I look at Steve like, oh man, it's just me. You try it, you know. You'll sound like Brian for sure. Steve picks it up, sounds exactly like Steve. And so it was a thrill, but it's a lesson that it's in the fingertips.
Yeah. I remember something that Frank Zappa told me once. He said that your tone is in your head, you know, which translates to your fingertips. And I didn't really understand that. But after some years, I definitely kind of resonated with that. And it was made very clear on many occasions. And one of them was once I was in my home studio and I was recording and I had my guitar, my pedals, my amp and sounding like me. And Edward came in because we were friends at the time, and he came over and we're just sitting at the console, we're talking, and he goes, oh yeah, I just wrote this cool thing. Let me show you. And he takes my guitar in my home and he had the audacity to sound exactly like Edward. And I'm like, ah, and there it is right there, you know? So yeah, it's definitely how you hear it in your head and how it your fingers touch.
When I had that conversation with Nuno, he called Eddie Van Halen Edward as well. And I did not ask him why. And Steve, you just called him Edward as well. When the world kind of knows him as Eddie Van Halen, is it a friendship thing that you guys call him Edward? Because I thought it was interesting.
Well, I think he preferred it.
I can give you my take on it, what I think happened, but I don't want this to be clickbait because Dave Roth likes to use short names. Like he called me Stevie, you know, who calls me Stevie, you know? So I believe that back in the day, he was calling Edward Eddie, and that's kind of what stuck. But as Joe mentioned, I'm pretty sure Edward preferred Edward.
I had never heard that. Now I feel bad that I've been calling him Eddie on the radio all these years.
Nobody really cares. Usually now.
the long friendship that you guys have goes back decades. Why did it take so long for you guys to release a song together? Because you just did it today.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's because we're like so headstrong when it comes to finally getting a chance to achieve all of our artistic goals. And you know, we have big plans, crazy ideas, schemes about all the songs and recordings we want to do and the tours we want to go on. And we just figured it would fall into place sooner or later. Right, Steve? We knew it was going to happen. We just wanted it to happen in a natural way.
Yeah, and it kind of happened at perfect timing because we've been able to appease that kind of desire to play together all.
Oh, we just lost him.
Just lost him.
Yeah.
You know, we've had no internet in the hotel this morning for some reason.
Oh, that's really
I don't know
weird.
Why. I'm actually tethering through my phone. Maybe that's what Steve's experienced.
Yeah. You got us now?
Yep, I got you now. Yep.
Okay. So, we've actually had a good dose of playing together all through the years in various ways. You know, if it wasn't like jumping on stage together and just doing something or a G3 tour or a G3 record, I think it was kind of enough at the through the years because, as Joe mentioned, we were so fiercely focused on our solo music and building our personal careers.
And now that, you know, we've had decades, we've been so fortunate to have decades of wonderful careers and recording solo records and touring the world. But this was something that was really bubbling under. And it's so nice how it just organically appeared at perfect time.
We're talking about the song, The Sea of Emotion, Part One, that came out today with the epic video that you can watch on YouTube. With your dual unbelievably successful careers, Joe, is there a song of Steve's that you covet that you're like, okay, that's the song that, like, I wish that one were mine? And Steve, is there a song of Joe's that you wish was yours?
You know, it depends on the mood. Like, you know, there are times in the day where the attitude song is the perfect song, you know, because it's just so bold. It's that it represents a certain part of Steve's personality that I relate to and that I know so well. And then other times it's, you know, something new, something really mysterious, like Little Pretty, or even going back to Passion and Warfare, For the Love of God, you know, beautiful, epic, you know, play every single note that you can squeeze out of your heart kind of thing, you know? So yeah, it depends on my biorhythm at the moment.
He's really having a hard time with his internet right now.
Oh yeah, there he is, he's back again.
Yeah, I coming in and out.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't hear what Joe was saying, but well, you know.
Oh, it basically said that I really didn't relate to anything that you've written or played, and it was a horrible question. I've been put on the spot.
Ah, we know how you really feel. That's a tough question because, you know, Joe has a particular DNA, musical DNA. Like when you go into that creative space, anybody, and you're really focused, your true intentions flow into what you're doing. And that.
Oh, that started out so good. I was feeling good about myself there.
I know. It seemed like he was going to give you such nice compliments, Joe. And then he was like, yeah. No, I can't do it. I got to go.
Yeah.
So that musical DNA that he has flows into all of the songs. You can hear it. It's just like it's a voice. And it's just so prominent in so many songs. I could pick, let's say, Always With You, Always With Me. I mean, that is, it's like a lullaby, a divine lullaby. And it's not just that the melody is lovely and perfect. It's the touch, it's the tone and fingers. It's the phrasing, you know, it's the connect. All that comes from the connection. And every song.
He was loading you up good, Joe.
It's good. Let me finish that up. Joe is such an amazing talent that, oh, here he is back again. Sorry.
So every time Joe releases a record, I sit there and think, first of all, I just embrace all those gorgeous, delicious melodies. And then it inspires me to find that kind of DNA within myself, because I'm not going to get Joe's, you know, that's a unique thing.
Sometimes music is the soundtrack to very specific memories. And Steve, I wanted to take the opportunity to tell you that Viv Woman and that whole Flexible album is so ingrained in a very specific year of my adolescence and is really the soundtrack to so many memories of childhood friends of mine that I'm still close friends with today. So I had to bring that up because I can't tell you how many copies of that album on cassette I burned through because I played them too much and still love that album to this day.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you. You know, I think back then when I was making that record, I just felt so innocent and so naive. And I was living in a house that I had purchased and I built a studio and it had all these people, my friends coming and going, living in it. I mean, it was like a packed house. It was like a musician wayward home for refugee musicians or something. And I understand what you mean, because that record, when I listened to it, as quirky and as silly as it is, it really did capture that innocence and that time and those people and all the experiences from back then.
And Joe, you told me years ago, you came into the studio and gave me a guitar lesson. And you told me a while back that when I tried to play guitar, that it was my fingernails that were getting in the way.
Yeah.
So at one point I cut them, and I just wanted to be able to tell you, I still couldn't play guitar.
Oh, so sorry.
I bumped into you late night last night. I was flipping around on the TV now that it's baseball season. Moneyball was on TV late last night, and there's that scene in the movie, and I was like, I'm going to talk to him tomorrow. It was hilarious that there you were in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so crazy. You know, the only reason why I'm in that movie is because things got totally screwed up. I was doing anthems back then, and about 2-3 weeks before then, but preseason game, the producer, the field producer, cued me improperly. And I wound up doing the anthem in front of about 10,000 people who stood up and did the right thing as I played the whole anthem. And then all of a sudden I heard, when I finished the last chord, you know, I hear, ladies and gentlemen, please stand for Joe Satriani playing the anthem. And I looked at the producer like, what? I just played it. And she said, come off the field. So they ushered me off the field, and the rest of the stadium there thinks I'm protesting for something, you know? It was just a complete screw up. Then the Jets fly over at the wrong time. Everything went wrong. So the A's management team are, you know, they're really apologetic. And they said, please, we're so sorry. Would you come back and do it again at the first game of the season? And I said, of course, don't worry about it. I'll be back. So I go back, and it just so happens that is the game they focus on in the movie. And so the director said, well, who played the anthem? We got to get that person. Just happened to be me because of that screw up. And the director actually shot that scene himself with a handheld camera for me.
Wow, that's crazy that a mistake actually turned out to be something great.
Yeah, yeah. See, that's why they say, you know, show business, it's 99% showing up. You just got to show up.
Yeah. Well, you guys are going to show up in Boston April 5th. You're on tour together. The new song is out. I'm assuming you're going to be playing the song together on stage every night. You're covering Metallica, so anything can happen.
Anything. That's right.
Anything is necessary.
Guys, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's so good to see you.
Thank you so much. Thank
see you.
See you
later. Nice to meet you, Steve.
There
see
he
you
is.
Later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Gary.
There they are, Joe Satriani and Steve Vai, who are out on a co-headlining tour together with a stop this Friday at the Orpheum Theater in Boston on April 5th. Check the links in the show notes of this episode to get your tickets. You can also listen to Joe's first appearance on the podcast on episode 93. You'll find all of Joe Satriani's links, all of Steve Vai's links, and the link to this episode's corresponding playlist. I make a playlist for every full-length episode of the Mistress Carrie podcast that features all of my guest music and all the songs and artists that we referenced in the interview. If you liked what you heard, don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe to the Mistress Carrie podcast. New full-length episodes come out every Wednesday. Plus, every weekday, you get the Sit Rep with all your rock news, music headlines, and entertainment updates in about 5 minutes. And you never know when we're going to release a bonus episode. Join me live every Tuesday night at 8:30 Eastern for my video show, Cocktails in the War Room, that's streamed live on my official Facebook page, YouTube channel, and Instagram. And you can always find me on the radio. Get the details on all of that and more at MistressCarrie.com. The Mistress Carrie Podcast, a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.